Thank you for joining me. I'm Katie Heinle, one of the new cohort of co-hosts, and this is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter at Fisheries Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast, or support the podcast on patreon.com/fisheriespodcast, along with Ben, Tyler, Janet, Robin, and John. If you're interested in showing off your support for the show or a favorite fish species, please go check out our merch over at the Fisheries Podcast fan shop hosted by Teespring, where you can find t-shirts, hats, stickers, and more. Look for the link in the show description. Today, I am interviewing another one of our new co-hosts, Hannah Gottesman. Hannah went to undergrad at Cornell, but worked with the lab at NC State on their cobia acoustic telemetry efforts. Cobia are a highly migratory species and the target of recreational and commercial fisheries in the Gulf of Mexico and up the eastern coast of the U.S. For her undergraduate thesis, she looked at their migratory patterns and is finishing up a project analyzing the temperature dependence of their seasonal shift offshore of North Carolina. Currently, Hannah is in her first year of her PhD at the University of Florida, where she is studying the spatial ecology of GAG, a popular recreationally and commercially targeted grouper in the eastern Gulf of Mexico. Welcome, Hannah, and thanks for being here today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Good. I guess starting back far, how did you get interested in fisheries?
So it's actually kind of funny. I took a bit of like a roundabout way to get to fishery science, especially marine fisheries. Mm-hmm. I'm from Southwest Ohio, but I was always, you know, the kind of person who just loves being on the water. So I did a lot of kayaking and boating and things like that. And I was a pretty ecologically oriented kind of kid too. I would always go creeking and like catch bullfrogs at my grandma's pond out back of her house and like see their different life stages and stuff. So I think I've always been the kind of person who wanted to, you know, figure out what's going on with critters in the water.
Yeah.
So then, you know, fast forward to my undergrad, I was undeclared, I think, until my sophomore year, and I was in upstate New York. But I saw this poster for Shoals Marine Lab, which, you know, Cornell runs with University of New Hampshire. And so I decided to enroll for an 8-week summer semester out there. And my first class was a sustainable fisheries course. And we got out on boats with fishermen, spoke with fisheries managers. And I think just seeing kind of the complex, like ecological puzzles in fishery science, and then also relating that to sort of the human side of things, it was really exciting for me. And it felt kind of unique to what I'd seen, you know, throughout my undergrad experience at that point. And so, yeah, I was, you know, totally into it from the get-go after that.
Yeah, I had a similar start. I just wanted to be in and around water. And I'm like, fish are in water. I guess I'll study fish. And it's worked out great.
You know, I feel like so many people I speak to are like, oh yeah, I was a big fisherman or whatever,
right?
And, you know, decided to study them. And I'm like, yeah, well, that wasn't me, but here we are. So,
yeah, you were mentoring you took some classes at Shoals Marine Lab and you also worked there as an intern, right?
So I took courses and then I did work for the lab, okay. But that was when I got back to Ithaca.
Yeah.
Because they need help just coordinating students and also having someone, I think, who's been out there that prospective students can speak to is really helpful.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's quite the experience to sign up to go live on an island and
yeah, you
know, get by seagulls and stuff. So I kind of had to, you know, walk them through it and also help them like plan their schedules and things like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I took a couple of field courses. One was at Shoals Marine Lab as well. And it was the seagulls were quite the experience there. What do you see as the benefits of taking classes at field schools?
So I think for Shoals specifically, it was pretty pivotal just, you know, for my trajectory as an early career scientist. And it solidified my interests and also helped me meet, you know, friends that I still speak to frequently and mentors who I've stayed in touch with since then. And yeah, I really couldn't trade it for anything. Like I think being able to engage with the study system and then also community members from the area is just really powerful. And it's hard to get that sort of intensive learning environment another way.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just very valuable. And I think, you know, Shoals did a good job of getting some lab skills and scientific thinking skills in there among, you know, field proficiency stuff. So it was great.
Yeah, but that's awesome. It's great to get experience with techniques before you, or like in the process of applying for jobs and just like knowing how research works.
Yeah.
And so I was looking at your CV and you've done a lot of research prior to starting your PhD. What got you interested in that research and how'd you get involved with those projects?
Mm-hmm. So I think research is something, I can't remember like one pivotal moment that was like, oh, I want to do research as a job. Mm-hmm. I think it was just, you know, I grew up how I was, like loving animals and getting outside. And then I would read like National Geographic magazines and things like that. And just sort of, I think that natural curiosity just kind of rolls into a research job. And when I found out that that was something you could actually be paid to do, I want to do that for sure. And so, yeah, I think Shoals really also, you know, fanned that flame. And I was able to find an internship through my undergrad advisor, who I actually met from Shoals. And, you know, he recommended that I apply to this CMAS summer fellowship at NC State's Marine Lab. So I followed that lead and fortunately was able to get the position. And that just sort of, I think, you know, catalyzed me on my future path, because it was such an intense and excellent learning experience and, you know, just an absolute blast.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I gave a little bit of a spiel on your undergrad research, but do you want to explain why they're interested in looking at cobia and the importance of those two or three studies that you're working on there?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, cobia, they're, you know, pretty heavily exploited. They're really popular for recreational fishing, especially. And they're unique in that they're pretty highly migratory. So, you know, they range all the way up and down the East Coast and around into the Gulf. But given that they have that really complex movement, not a ton was really known about their spatial ecology, especially like north of Georgia. So that's another thing that really, you know, it got me kind of hooked on the spatial ecology thing, just because cobia is such a great system for that.
Yeah.
So yeah, but just to better understand kind of potentially their stock structure, population structure, and then also just, you know, their seasonal movement patterns. The purpose of that NC State study was, you know, to get at all of those things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And it looked like you're in the process of publishing those as well. How have you found the writing process to be so far?
You know, it is always way longer than you think it's going to be. It was nice at least that I had kind of a good foundation to work from with my undergrad thesis. I was able to, you know, start adapting that and adding pieces to that, and also cutting pieces out, because there's a lot to cover in a, you know, a thesis that you don't need for publication. But it's been a great experience, and honestly, like, prepped me well for the pandemic, kind of, because I was coordinating virtually with my lab at NC State while I was at Cornell working with mentors there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice practice for doing everything on the phone or by Zoom
before
I needed it. So yeah, it's coming along. I think it's almost there. I would like to get it done
as
soon as I can, but we'll see.
That's awesome. So when did you start your PhD? Have you just started that?
Mm-hmm, yeah. So I've just completed a year and now I'm in my summer classes. Mm-hmm.
So mainly pandemic?
Yeah. 100%.
That's how mine was too. I think I got like 2 months of non-pandemic. Mm-hmm. So
I graduated from Cornell in the pandemic, and then I had, you know, my summer of pandemic fun where I just hung out and didn't do anything, and then I started my PhD. Actually, I started in Ohio too, because some of my housing stuff fell through because people got COVID,
right?
So I was extra delayed.
Oh man.
Yeah, so it's been definitely an exercise in like planning and being able to try and set deadlines for myself, and also trying to coordinate with people virtually.
Yeah.
But, you know, it only gets easier from here, hopefully.
Right. Yeah, I hope so. That's awesome. So what are you working on for your PhD?
I'm a hybrid grad student, which is kind of fun. I'm working with my chair, Dr. Suluer Barbieri at FWRI, so the government agency in St. Petersburg.
Okay.
And then my co-chair, Dr. Will Patterson at UF.
And that's the University of Florida, right?
Yes, exactly. Cool. So right now I'm living in Gainesville, doing classes and kind of getting that all handled. And then I'll be going to St. Pete later. All of my field work's out of St. Pete though.
Yeah.
So I'm studying GAG, which I think you may have mentioned before. It's a popular recreationally and commercially fished grouper. And specifically, I'm looking at their population structure kind of over the West Florida shelf. And they're just really interesting and unique because they're protogenous hermaphrodites, which is something, you know, I've never encountered in my research before. Yeah. So that means they begin life as females and then they turn male later. And they have a really complex spatial life cycle. And within that, they have sex-specific movement patterns. Mm-hmm. So it's a ton going on. But basically, larval GAG, they'll settle in estuarine nurseries in West Florida. And then as they mature, they move into nearshore habitat. And that's where, you know, their spawning aggregations occur, mm-hmm. or their pre-spawning aggregations.
Excuse me.
And then they eventually move out to the continental shelf edge to spawn, and the males remain in those deeper waters. So it's just this really fascinating and complex life cycle. So my goal with my dissertation is to close that loop kind of on their spatial life cycle, mm-hmm. by looking at spatial and temporal trends in connectivity between their nursery habitat and then the spawning grounds, ideally in both directions.
Yeah.
Thing.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so I'm super pumped for that. It's a bit of an ambitious project, but ideally I'd like to combine like otolith chemistry and then biophysical modeling for dispersal and larval dispersal.
Yeah.
And then maybe genetics if I'm lucky.
Nice.
But yeah, it's really exciting. It's just, I think, you know, cobia kind of got me pumped about spatial ecology and fish movement, and then, you know, GAG is like a huge treat.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. So
that's awesome. So with the otolith chemistry, is that to look at what they're eating, or can you like match it with signatures of where they're at in different parts of the ocean?
Yeah. So we'd be looking at like habitat history using mm-hmm. the otoliths, and specifically if you basically take juvenile GAG and from the estuaries and then look at the chemistry of their otoliths and see if you can distinguish between estuaries and how persistent that tag is,
mm-hmm.
then you can turn around and connect that to the adults by looking at the cores of their otoliths.
Yeah.
So if their chemical signatures match to those in the estuaries, then you can link those habitats together.
That's awesome. I've heard of some work with that in rivers with salmon, like up in Alaska, but I wasn't sure if it was something you could use in the ocean. So that's super cool.
Yeah, exactly. It's an analogous process. So
it's yeah. Really cool. That's awesome. So are you getting your, like, are you going out sampling or are you using the fisheries out there to try to collect some fish from that?
Mm-hmm. So there's been kind of ongoing sampling with the agency. And through my work with Sue, I have access to those samples as part of her lab. And then I've helped with a few trips too.
Nice.
Mountain fishing, which has been so good. Yep. So I get really tired though, because we jig in, you know, hundreds of feet of water. And so
right.
one really like buff arm.
Yeah. But, that's yep. awesome. Very cool. I also have a question. Do you know why they're called GAG?
No, and I've wondered that too. And I think I'm going to have to just do a deep dive and investigate, because it has to be out there somewhere. But yeah, I have no idea.
Okay. That was just like, I'm wondering why. Like,
not cute, kind of unflattering. Right. And I'm like, they're cool fish.
I mean, that's how I feel about suckers, but at least the sucker's name kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and true. It does make sense. I was trying to think what GAG could be from, and I
right.
have no idea.
Yeah.
But if I find out, I'll let you know. Maybe.
Sounds good.
Stay tuned, future episodes.
Yep. Deep dive into the historical names. That's awesome. One thing I'm always interested to know, especially with grad students, because I know we can really focus on our research a lot. What kind of interests or hobbies do you have outside of fisheries or your research?
Okay. To be honest, I think I'm one of those people who, I got a dog and now he's like my whole personality.
Yep.
So most of my time outside of research, I spend either like teaching him new tricks or, you know, just hiking and running around and stuff.
Yeah.
But I did teach him to sit in my kayak. Which I'm very proud about.
Nice.
Yeah. His name's Bandit, by the way. I just tell you what his name is. But yeah, he's getting really humongous though. So I think he's going to outgrow my boat, unfortunately.
Well, my dog is about 80 pounds and I fit him on a one person sit on top kayak. So if you're okay with bobbling a lot, you can make it work. Exactly.
I'm fine. I'll fall in. I don't care.
Exactly. As long as it's warm out, it's fine.
I know. Now that I live in Florida instead of
It's warm all the time.
Almost too warm sometimes.
Yeah, no kidding. I did a summer internship at Moat Marine Lab in Florida, and the humidity was just something else. I'm from Montana, where it's just so arid. How do people live like this?
I know. Especially, so I've got like, you know, curly hair, and I turn into an absolute like clown person. And I'm like, this is just me now. So, I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I mean, Gainesville's awesome just because there's a lot of like hiking opportunities. It's all very flat, which is new to me. They also have these like inland springs that are beautiful. So I've snorkeled and kayaked in those.
Oh, that's awesome.
Fun. And I'd love to dive one at some point. I just think it would be fascinating how like clear it is.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the diving I've done has been cold for one, and then I dove in Cayuga Lake in New York and that was silty, so
yeah,
it was rough.
I mean, Florida's got to be a great place for diving, so
I'm excited for warm water diving. Just asked about it. I think that about covers it. I mean, I picked up fly fishing.
Oh, nice.
So I think that's like my most interesting new one. It's like cool, but I'm not very good at it.
That's awesome
though, so I feel pretty
nice. That's awesome. I mean, I've been fly fishing for a couple years and I'm still not very good at it, so I think it's just fun going out there with it.
Yeah, it's a blast. I like it. I remember I caught like my first tiny little bass in Ohio and I was myself.
That's awesome. Very cool. All right, since we're both new co-hosts of the Fisheries Podcast, I was curious what drew you to becoming a new co-host.
I think, like we were talking about with the pandemic earlier, there was something about, you know, starting grad school in a pandemic and kind of having to feel like you're doing all this work alone and it's sort of you're cut off from your peers and stuff. It was cool for me to find the podcast as like a way to hear from other human beings and like learn about the field. And I think it's neat because I've always found that people in ecology and fisheries are often, you know, really fun, interesting people with a lot of unique backstories, you know? So it's been great to get a glimpse into that and, you know, feel like I'm not just sitting by myself at home.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I saw the hosting gig as a great opportunity to just meet some new people, learn from them and connect with the field in a way that, you know, maybe I wouldn't have thought about had I not been locked inside. So yeah, I'm excited about it though. Just like make some new fish friends.
Yeah, me too. That's awesome. All right. So the tough part of the interview is over and it's on our final few questions. The first one, okay, people say it's easy. I think it's a hard question, but I'd love to know, what is your favorite fish?
Yeah, that's like picking a favorite kid. That's
right.
So like I've put some thought into this because, you know, it's a very difficult question. And I think I've come down to the mummy chog as my favorite fish because, you know, obviously I adore cobia and gag.
Yeah.
But I just think mummy chugs are so cool since they can like tolerate such a wide range of conditions, you know, and I've kind of run into them just throughout my experience in fisheries. So, you know, I worked with some at Shoals for an experiment, yeah, and then way later, again at CMAST, I helped with like a tag and recapture study using like elastomer tags. So I was basically giving them like little polymer tattoos.
Yeah.
And yeah, for whatever reason, I just find them super endearing. And just, you know, the fact that they're so resilient, but they're so nondescript, I think it's really cool.
That's awesome.
So yeah, although I have used them for like redfish bait. So nice. To be fair, maybe I'm not their favorite.
Right.
I do like them.
That's awesome. I'll have to look them up. I don't think I've ever heard of those before.
Yeah, they're super cute. And I think, you know, they've got some sexual dimorphism, so you can tell them apart in the field.
Nice. Cool. Awesome. That's a great answer.
Dinners, I think, too. Because we were doing some field work on the side of the road and people were asking us if we were selling them.
Oh, no.
These aren't for bait. If you catch them later, sure.
That's funny. I find, as a graduate student myself, I find this question tough too, but what is your dream job or location?
Oh man. Yeah, that is hard.
Yeah.
Somewhere by the ocean to start.
Yeah.
Cool. Although not to hate on freshwater, because I do love it and it's where I got my start.
Yeah. Ohio, so. They're both great.
Yeah. I think so. I'd want to continue in fisheries research for sure, just like for as long as I can, basically. And I think something that would be really exciting to be a part of that I've kind of thought about just from, you know, working on a grouper species and thinking about the status of other groupers around the world. I feel like it would be neat to assist like developing research or management plans for datapore fisheries.
Yeah.
I think that would be, you know, really rewarding and a good use of my time.
Yeah.
And help improve those systems, because especially, you know, with fish with complex movement or, you know, tendencies like that, I think getting a jump on maybe integrating, you know, spatial information into management could be huge.
Yeah.
For endeavors like that. And I'd love to be a part of that. I think that'd be so fulfilling and cool.
That's awesome.
As far as where I'd like to end up, I don't know. Like, I love traveling, but I also, you know, Florida is absolutely rad, so I'm not in a rush to go anywhere else. I think if I could spend some time like in New Zealand, that would be amazing, just because it's, you know, their exclusive economic zone is humongous and like fisheries are such an important part of their economy. I feel like it would be, you know, fascinating. Plus it's beautiful. So I could just, you know, be outside all the time. And I think that'd be great. Also, North Carolina has a place in my heart. If I could end up in Morehead City,
yeah,
I would be completely down for that.
Nice. It's not- Awesome. All right. What is your favorite memory associated with fisheries?
Oh, man. That's hard.
Yeah.
These are so hard.
I know. This was supposed to be the easy part of the interview.
Man. I mean, so I'm going to be basic and pick a field work one, I think.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, they're cool. So
yeah.
I think maybe other than catching my first gag, it was very exciting. My favorite memory, it's got to be from CMAST, I would think, because we did some like very kind of heavy duty field work. And I remember one week we were just retrieving and deploying acoustic receivers like all week. So we were skin diving for ones that were like attached to channel markers, and then also like jumping on those aid to navigation buoys, like the huge metal red and green ones out there, to rig up these receivers that we'd hang from them. So it's just, you know, physically grueling, but at the same time, like just very satisfying work. And one day we went all the way offshore to get some of our deepest receivers, that are acoustic release systems. So they're on the seafloor. And I remember the conditions were just like shockingly immaculate. It was blue on all sides and the water was so smooth and I'd never seen it like that. And so we had a break for lunch and I, you know, jumped in and swam and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think like, I'll probably just hold on to that memory forever, especially, you know, as a kid, like I grew up swimming in the Ohio River and then to be in mm-hmm. that blue of water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely mind blowing. So I think that's one where I felt like, ooh, I made it.
Yeah. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. It was really cool.
All right. Last question. If there was one point or principle you'd have programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
You know, I wish I could come up with something like deep. For this one. But I think I would say that before adopting a dog or an animal, people should be 100% sure that they can and will provide for the critter's whole life.
Yeah.
That's something that I'm like, I care about that.
Yeah.
Not deep or philosophical, but I'm like, that's a good one.
So important.
A little plug for Bandit, my pandemic puppy.
Yeah. That's yeah. awesome. I think many of us have dogs, so, or yeah. have dogs or want dogs. So that's great info. Awesome.
Sweet.
Thank you to everyone for listening to the 128th episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And thanks again to Hannah for being a guest and new co-host on the show. I made a rookie podcaster's mistake and forgot to ask Hannah for her contact information during our interview. But fear not, I reached out to Hannah and have included it here. If you'd like to get in touch with Hannah and keep up to date on her awesome research, you can find her on Instagram at hgroupersman, on Twitter at godismanhannah, or via email at h.godisman@ufl.edu. If you'd like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter at KB Heinley. The podcast is at Fisheries Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast, or old-fashioned email feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. You can download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening app or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget to head over to our Patreon page and support the podcast if you feel inclined. I'm Katie Heinley, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, if you're going to adopt an animal, be prepared for the commitment it entails.